Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today, myself and Buster, welcome along Joe McKelvey. Good morning, Joe. How's things?
Hi, good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, doing well, mate. How are you, Buster?
Very good, thanks, guys. Very good.
Good stuff. Well, we've got a game to look back on, last Saturday's 1-0, 2-0 defeat to Celtic. A much improved performance, particularly when you compare it to the previous two visits to Celtic Park, in which we had lost 7-0 and 5-0. For the best part of the game, we contained Celtic and offered a bit of a threat in the break as well. A late error by Stephen McManus led to Craig Sampson bringing down Moussa Dembele, and he also stepped up to send Sampson the wrong way from the resulting penalty kick. So a 2-0 defeat in the end, Buster, but I think there's certainly positives to take from it, and we can now go into the games, two massive games against Inverness and Ross County at Fir Park, in a fairly positive frame of mind?
Yeah, I would think so. To be honest with you, I didn't go along to Celtic Park, so I've only seen, you know, what you see in the highlights, things like that. But as you said, at least looks better, you know, than a 7 or a 5-0 defeat. Going from the highlights as well, you know, we done what we would probably expect to do, sort of sit in and try and hit them the break. We missed two or three good chances as well, I thought. But, you know, it's at Parkhead, and it's kind of rare we get any points there. So it was disappointing to lose our last minute penalty the way we did. But I don't think MD really went along, or when that fixture came up, thought we were going to maybe, you know, win or steal a point. But it's always a bonus when we do. So, as you say, at least it wasn't an absolute tank in this thing.
Joe, headlines from the starting 11 for the game was debuts for Ross McLean and Jack McMillan. Also during the game, Jake Hastie came on for the last 10 minutes, and David Ferguson made a return to the first team fold as well, coming on for McMillan, who picked up what looked to be a hamstring injury. It was a shame after both of them fared very well in the debut performances. That's encouraging as well, isn't it, that Mark McGee clearly trusts these young boys enough to bring them in, and what is a huge stage. It was 50,000 at Celtic Park, Celtic having beaten us so convincingly in the previous two games. It was a big ask for the young boys, but they passed it with flying colours, and we can now hopefully develop these guys further in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's two ways to look at it. In terms of giving them their debut at Celtic Park, you could think you'd go into a game where you're essentially going in with nothing to lose, nothing's expected of us going to Celtic Park. I mean, anything you get there is a bonus. So you could put the young boys in, give them an experience of playing at a big stadium to a bigger crowd without any pressure really to go and get the result. And you could arguably say that once they've played in that atmosphere, they're equipped to play in any game in the Premiership, to be honest. So that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is, on another day, say it was against Celtic in the final day last season, and for example, Luke Watt didn't have the best day afternoons, and he's not really returned to the first team fold since then. You could look at it that way, but it seems to have gone well, and I'm all for us kind of promoting youth to the team. If you look at Ross McLean's been doing well in the under-20s, and it's just nice, refreshing to see him get the chance. Same with McMillan's one player I've seen a few times for the 20s, and he's looked good, but I didn't know whether McGee was ready to pitch him in there. I don't know whether it was injuries or what that forced that, but certainly I'm delighted to see us trust their own youth players and going to be happy to bring them through. One thing I did think from it was that if we played Ross McLean on the wing at Celtic Park and then Jake Casty, who's a left-sided winger, come on as a sub, then it just makes me wonder how far out the picture that Dom Thomas has got these days.
Well, yeah, Dom Thomas not in the squad for the game, but even more so Lionel Ainsworth, who with 10 minutes to go, you're maybe getting an off chance, a slight chance of an equaliser, and Mark McGee opts to bring on Jake Hasty instead of Ainsworth, a guy that's got a fair amount of experience and possibly would have taken less time to bed into the game, which isn't a slight in Hasty at all, but by the time he had got on and settled into the game, it was full time. So that kind of, it's a show of faith in Jake Hasty from Mark McGee, but it's also possibly quite a damning indictment of where Lionel Ainsworth is just now.
I think that's maybe true, but I think if you think back to the summer, I think we were quite blatantly trying to get rid of Lionel Ainsworth at one point. I think it was sort of unofficially we told him, you know, he could leave if he found another club. But I think he's, you know, he's settled up here. I don't know if his missus is from up here or what, but he's, you know, he seems to be settled up here. He didn't want to leave. He said he was going to stay and fight for his place. But, I think a bit of me sort of cynical about it and saying, you know, does Lionel Ainsworth coming on for the last 10 minutes, does that bump him up a, you know, £500, you know, appearance fee or something like that? Is it something like that that's come into play as well when you're looking along the bench? It's another question whether or not it should, or whether it actually did, but you know, that was one of the things that crossed my mind. But I think I know is probably one of the highest earners at the club, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, again he was told during the transfer windows he can find himself another club. He's not featured very much, despite, you know, his first two seasons having great figures, great stats. You know, we all know he's got a concentration problem at times, or a, you know, an effort problem at times when it comes to defending. But it was a kind of strange one, and he's definitely not been seen much this season. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's told he can find another club.
I was thinking that myself with Jake Hasty coming on instead of him. That kind of crossed my mind that might be the case, because I mean, when you think about it, Izzy is one of the highest earners at the club. He was probably signed, when he signed his new deal, was just in the back of the playoffs where, let's be honest, he terrorised Rangers in both legs, and he was looking like a major asset. Last season didn't quite work for him. In terms of him getting a chance last season, I don't think it probably did. Whereas the season before, his form had been up and down, and I think there was a lot to do with attitude and effort in that last season. But last season, I think he was just a victim of circumstance. McGee came in and played three in the middle, and his front three were Johnson, Moulton, McDonald at most points, and it was difficult at times, I felt, for Ainsworth to kind of break through that. But he did. I think he still ended up our highest assister last year from his limited game time. So, and he also got a few goals as well.
I think, rightly or wrongly, that day at Tynecastle, for Hill, has possibly signalled the end for Lionel Ainsworth, in my opinion. I don't think that I've seen a manager hang a player out to dry as publicly, certainly not as a Motherwell manager, as he did Brian Illingsworth. And I think from there, the writing was on the wall in terms of his future at Motherwell. That's not to say that he's not been given further chances, but I think even when Marvin Johnson leaves, you're thinking, well, this is surely the chance for guys like Thomas and Ainsworth to step up and fill the void there. But it's very telling that neither of them have been able to do so.
But when, just on the point of him being hung out to dry at Fir Hill, did this, obviously it was in McGee's control, but was it not said at the time by one of the journalists, I think it might even have been Scott Mullen that was on a while back, said that McGee didn't send Ainsworth out to the press, Ainsworth wanted to go out to the press himself. Obviously McGee would have been in his power to say, no, no, you stay in here or whatever. But was that not how the story transpired after Fir Hill? Fir Hill, McGee not essentially hanging him out to dry, but if you like, I'm hanging himself out to dry.
Well, to a certain extent, the way it tends to work is that the press will request players, and what it sounds like to me is they've possibly ambitiously requested to speak to Lionel Ainsworth. The press officer at the time has possibly asked, do you want to go out there? And Lionel has said yes, which really, I would have said that it was a club matter. They should have said, no, you're not going out, you're not in the right frame of mind. And the fact that it broke down in the press conference, I would say, kind of backs up that theory that he shouldn't have been sent out, or he shouldn't have agreed to go out. Someone should intervene there, but
it's a strange one, that, because see the season before, you heard me, obviously that season he still ended up with what, 9 goals and 10 assists or whatever, so when he was on, when he was good, he was brilliant that season, but there were a period of months on end where he just didn't look interested or like nonchalant to me. He was just so kind of lackadaisical when he was supposed to be defending or anything. And when it's a team battling at the wrong end of the table, you'd think a player would have kind of would have more drive in him than that. But then, you know, when you get beat by Partick Thistle in February, they're still a lot, at that point we were kind of down the wrong end of the table as well, but there's still a lot of football still to be played in the season, as proved, because we ended up finishing 5th from where we were at that point in time. But when you think of him going out in that press conference and breaking down in tears, I mean, that kind of banishes my theory about his attitude and his effort the season before, because it kind of shows that he evidently does care.
Either that, or he had just been given an absolute bollock, and he was feeling rather fragile at the time. But I don't know if it comes down to attitude with Ainsworth anymore, Buster. I think it's more just that I dare say that his time at the club has run its course, and it possibly would be interesting to both parties in terms of notwithstanding his family ties. I don't know anything about that, and quite frankly, it's none of our business. But if, for the sake of his career, I think it would be the best if he was to move on in January.
I think you're possibly right there. I know, obviously, the last time when we said he could leave, I think Ross County were looking at him. You know, and he obviously wasn't too interested in that, or at least it didn't, you know, plan it for either party there. But as you say, this season he's been a bit part player, so it's kind of hard to question, you know, his attitude.
Oh, really? Because we've not really seen enough of him to see.
Is that, you know, still that problem where he's maybe a bit lackadaisical getting back and things like that? But as you said, I don't think he fits into the system for a start. It's all right saying, you know, when Johnson played, you know, he was a winger. Johnson sort of fit into that front three pretty well, despite the fact he was a left winger. He sort of enjoyed coming across, playing in the middle, playing in the right when he had to. I don't really see that being Lionel's game. You know, I mean, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think that Lionel is just an out-and-out right winger. You know, he'd like to go to the byline or cut inside and have a shot. But other than that, I don't really see him being able to float across the park in a party of front three the way that Johnson did. So I just don't think he fits into the system or McGee's plans, and that's where, you know, that's where he's not getting any game time.
I agree with you there. I mean, I think he's one of those players that is probably feeling the effects of the death of the 4-4-2 system. Not many teams play a 4-4-2 anymore. Yeah. And I think he's one of those players that, as you say, he's an out-and-out winger in a 4-4-2. A guy who kind of gets to the byline and crosses it to two men up front, or a guy, as you say, who cuts in and has a shot. Like, he's a lot different a player to Johnson, I think. I mean, Johnson was very powerful as well and being quick.
Yeah,
I think that maybe with Johnson kind of compensated for maybe things that he wasn't technically quite as good as Ainsworth at. I mean, in terms of the range of goals Ainsworth scored for Motherwell and what he can do with a ball at his feet is better than what Johnson could, in my opinion. But when you think about it, like, Ainsworth also, I think, as a substitute, has never made much of an impact for me. Before you two, you might jump in. I remember he did score the winner against Inverness under Ian Barakoff coming on as a substitute, but generally so many times you see him come off the bench for me, and I think he struggles to get into a game that's already going on. And I think when he does start games, you can tell within the first 10 or 15 minutes whether it's going to be a good afternoon for him or not, whether he gets by his left back the first time he goes to the ball, or whether he gets kicked in the first 15 minutes and you don't tend to see him as much. Whereas with Johnson, there were so many times when he was playing with us that he'd get absolutely halved and he'd just get up and go again. That was where I think the two of them differ in a big way.
Guys, specialist subject time and Mark McGee's comments prior to the Celtic game, it caused a fair bit of backlash when he was sarcastic in saying that we were lucky to get some of the results we've had at Celtic Park in recent times, which didn't go down particularly well with certain sections of the support which I honestly do believe are looking for Mark McGee to slip up on occasion and want to jump down every single comment that he makes. It was almost a dismissive type statement where he had said that we're going to the best team in the league, basically. I'm just paraphrasing here because I don't have the direct quotes in front of me. It was quite a defeatist sounding quote, shall we say, but to me, what Mark McGee says in the press, I'm quite willing to take with a pinch of salt, Joe, and let's face it, there wasn't any chance that he was going to be going into that dressing room and telling the players that they were in for an absolute shoo-in on the day. And it showed in the performance, great levels of hunger and desire. Yes, we didn't offer very much going forward. Yes, we had to spend a lot of time where we didn't have the ball. But that's what every visit to Celtic Park entails, to be honest. Sometimes you are going to go and get turned over. At this point in time, I think that Celtic are possibly stronger than they've been, certainly than I can recall in the last 10 years, to be honest. So, yes, Mark McGee perhaps should not be saying these defeatist things to the press. But on the other hand, you've got to look at it and say, well, we were all saying the same. We were taking Celtic -3 goals, -4 goals. So what Mark McGee was saying doesn't differ from what the fans were saying. So it doesn't. And I don't think he was saying it to the players. What I'm trying to get at is, it's a bit hypocritical for people to say, oh, we're going to go to Celtic Park and we're going to get stuffed. But when the manager says it, absolute uproar. It's bizarre, actually.
Yeah, I get kind of a little bit of both sides of the story. I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, I think, as you say, you take what Mark McGee says in the press with a pinch of salt. Sometimes I think it's all kind of a big act with him, in a way that he's trying to kind of deflect pressure from the players as such, I would say, at times. So if you look at it that way, I think he's maybe said what we're all thinking, as you say, but I don't think he's gone into the dressing room and said that to them. But in terms of in the public eye, that's maybe taking the pressure off the players to an extent, especially if he knew that he was going to be giving two young guys their first starts and there was a potential for one more to got two more, sorry, took him off the bench. I know Ferguson's played a few games before, but if you look at it that way, he was maybe trying to take the pressure off the players in the public eye as such. But I mean, I think there is still an element in our, I know there's still an element in our support who would seem desperate to see Mark McGee fail, however bizarre that it seems. And people kind of jump on the first kind of opportunity to be able to kind of say, oh, McGee's done this or McGee said that, I'm not giving him the time of day or whatever. I've seen a couple of people on Twitter saying that they weren't going to the game because of it, but I could think with some people Mark McGee's face just doesn't fit, regardless of how good a manager he's been for us. I mean, he's been good for us in both spells. I mean, he completely transformed our season last year. And if you look at it that way, Stuart McCall at times, I found when we were playing bigger sides, was a bit despondent in his pre-match press conferences. And he, without maybe being as forthright as McGee was, the same kind of message was conveyed, maybe just in a jollier fashion. So I think people just really need to kind of cut McGee some slack in terms of he has done a great job for us, and I don't think anyone could doubt that. I mean, would you rather have an arrogant, bullish manager that was a bit outspoken in the press but brought results on the pitch, or would you rather have a really nice guy who's very media friendly, says all the right things, and then goes out and gets thumped on a Saturday? That's the way I look at it.
There's people who support who, like Joe says, would rather we done well in the park and couldn't care who was managing their team. Then there's people who don't like McGee, quite openly admit it, which is fair enough, don't want him to be the manager. Again, their opinion, fair enough. They can give you a million reasons why. And then there's people who hear their pals say these things or hear somebody they admire say these things. And they're the ones that really get me, the ones who can't tell you why or whatever. They just like to shout because their pals are shouting. But as Joe says, there's a million miles between our team under Barakoff and our team under McGee. So I certainly know, you know, what one I'd prefer.
Yeah, I think I was involved in a bit of a debate in Facebook about this, and to me that's what it boils down to, is results. Yes, I certainly would prefer to go along to Fir Park and go along to the away games and be entertained, and for the best part of Mark McGee's tenure, his second spell, I've been entertained. I think the performances have been much better, the results have been much better, and that's good enough for me, to be honest. I'm not going for drinks with Mark McGee at the weekend, so basically, if he's an arse behind the scenes or personally, then so be it. But I kind of, football is such a fickle game. Mark McGee did a fantastic job with Motherwell in his first spell and used the club as a stepping stone, which so many other players have done in the past, and it's not got our backs up to the same degree that Mark McGee managed to do it. And I know there was different circumstances in the way that he left, but I think it's just kind of time to build a bridge here and just kind of concentrate on what's going on in the park. We've got things behind the scenes at the club that are reaching an absolutely pivotal stage as well. It's time for us all to kind of rally around and try and get the team to be as good as it possibly can be, to try and get the football club as good as it possibly can be. But instead, there's wee divides here, there and everywhere.
See, just on that, when you were saying about Mark McGee used the club as a stepping stone like so many others have, yeah, people seemed to react far worse to Mark McGee meeting with Vladimir Romanov, if it was him at the time, and discussing taking the Hearts job and then not taking it.
Well, I don't think he actually got on the plane, but he did, obviously. He was heading, or he got on the plane and got off the plane, but he didn't go to Lithuania in India.
So then you look at that, right? You look at that situation where Mark McGee had his head turned by Hearts, thought about it after a great season with us, and then decided to stay. I don't know how any of these people who seem to berate McGee for that and hold it against him can call the situation as being any different. As after a great season with us, Stuart McCall got offered the job by Sheffield United. He had his head turned by it, but then decided to stay, and he was lauded as a hero. To me, they're pretty much two identical situations, and all that comes down to that is people's personal opinion of Mark McGee. At the end of that, for me, they're both, you need to treat both of those situations very similarly, and Motherwell fans don't, on by general.
Aye, absolutely, and you think football fans are also often accused of having short memories in terms of things. But with Motherwell fans and Mark McGee, it seems like they remember every minute detail of what went on in the first spell. It's pretty bizarre to watch it all unravel. And I think what we'll do is we'll ask Matt Johnson to come on in the near future and just explain a wee bit about what the current problem is with Mark McGee, because as far as I'm concerned, the job that he's doing is up to par. It's better than, well, certainly the final season, or the first few months of the final season under Stuart McCall, anything Ian Barraclough served us up. So, really, what are our expectations? What are our demands of a manager? The youth players are getting a chance, a top half finish last season. I'm struggling to get my head around it, but I think as long as Mark McGee's at the club, there will always be his detractors, and there's no getting away from that.
There will always be, as you say, and as I say, you know what, I don't really mind. People can have their opinions. There's people who are going to think that, you know, X player's great, and some people are going to think that X player's shite. So there's opinions are always going to be different. But just come back to when McGee was, his first spell. I can't exactly mind exactly, you know, what was happening, but I mind at the time thinking this guy was being an arsehole. He was touting himself everywhere. And I remember being pretty upset about how he was going about it. We had a pretty poor last season compared to the one before under McGee as well, so that didn't really help either. But as we said, you know, these things happen in football. Scott McDonald did nothing but tout himself everywhere the first time he was here. Dundee United, Hearts,
Rangers.
Celtic Rangers, aye, everywhere. And again, quite right, I remember being annoyed at him as well. Scott McDonald actually was really professional about it on the park at that point, I thought, as well, though. He was fantastic for Motherwell still, despite coming out every second week saying he wanted to sign with Dundee United, Hearts, Rangers, Celtic. it wasn't a care. But again, Stephen Pearson's done it. It happens all the time, probably every club day. But as you say, these guys come back, they don't really get as much jip as I nearly said Stephen Hughes there for some reason. It's nearly get as much jip as Mark McGee has, but it's one of those things where he's just not going to be liked, and that's the end of it.
What we'll do is we'll turn our attention to Wednesday night's game against Inverness. What we plan to do is we'll record a podcast following that, where we'll look back in the Inverness game and preview Ross County, who visit Fir Park on Saturday. Buster for Carrick Thistle, it was a difficult start under Richie Foran, but results have steadily improved. Yesterday they snatched a 1-1 draw at home against Kilmarnock, and I think it was an 89th minute goal to secure a share of the spoils. Regardless though, Inverness, whether it be home or away, is always a physical encounter. It's a tough fixture. But we finished with two home games this month, two winnable home games. We must be looking at least 4 points from these two games.
I don't think it'd be a bit of a stretch to say we would be targeting 6 points, to be fair. 4 points would be good. 6 points would be ideal. As you see, Inverness had a bit of a tough start. Richie Foran, I didn't even know he was doing coaching or anything. You know, we spoke to him, what was it, last year or the year before, and he was telling us how he'd been injured and, you know, doing what if he mentioned his coaching then, sorry, I didn't even pick up on it. But he seems to have turned around a wee bit. I think he won Manager of the Month or something, kinda recently as well. So yeah, as you say, you know, Inverness seem to have picked up a bit, they seem to be doing pretty well.
looks like they had a good win yesterday. A good draw yesterday, sorry. After being down to Kilmarnock. But again, I've not seen much of them, to be fair. So it's one of those ones where I've not really watched much Inverness. Going by basically how they are sitting in the league, they're sitting pretty similar to us. I think they've got a point more than us. But as you say, as well as at home, we really need to sort of win these two games and basically get so we can get our season off the ground, basically, and hopefully go on a wee bit of a run for here. We've had a couple of tough games recently, so it's not going to get any easier after this either. I think we'll get Aberdeen twice, stuff like that coming up. So, we really need to start winning these winnable games at home.
Joe, it's testimony to Richie Foran that after a few bad results to start the season, particularly the heavy defeat at Tynecastle, that he stuck at his job and he's kind of turned things around. He'll be desperate to make a mark on his return to Fir Park. He spoke in the podcast about how much time and how much affection he's got for Motherwell, but that'll all be put to one side come Wednesday night.
Absolutely. I mean, I think he scored a couple of goals for Inverness at Fir Park. His time's a player as well, but no, I think I was kind of sceptical about how well he would do, the way he started the season and how he just kind of seemed to be sprung from nowhere. And if anything, I'm sure I read him saying that there was times he didn't see himself as being a coach, so for him to go straight into the manager's job is obviously going to be a big step for him. But how he's turned around has impressed me. Certainly, I think he's in quite limited resources up there, to be honest. And I think signing Kevin McNaughton was quite a coup for him in the summer. But then, obviously, he got injured for the season, so having that on his plate as well as the bad start of the season kind of makes it all the more good that he's managed to turn it around.
Buster, there's a few selection headaches facing Mark McGee. We don't know about the fitness of Stephen Harrell, who, again, this season has struggled for a consistent run of games. Joe Chalmers has recently undergone an operation, so you would suspect that he'll be struggling. So the left-back position, do we persist with Jack McMillan? Is he fit enough to play after his injury at Celtic Park? Chris Cadden, you would hope, would be returning to the fold as well. Sorry, Chris Cadden did return to the fold against Celtic. There's plenty for Mark McGee to chew over, and perhaps the week break that came about, given that Aberdeen were in the League Cup semi-final, might be of some sort of benefit for us to get the guys that were struggling. I'm thinking also Luka Belic, who hasn't even had a sniff yet so far. These guys must be roundabout up to speed and desperate to make a mark.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever see Luka Belic, to be honest with you. Probably, as his loan period winds down, he might get one or two appearances. But, if he's injured or whatever, these sort of things don't tend to work out well if you're injured for most of the time. You're on a six-month loan or whatever. So I don't know if we'll see him, but to go to the left-back position, if Jack McMillan's fit, I probably expect to see him playing there because, as you says, Joe Chalmers underwent a groin operation, I think it was, similar to the one Ollie Moult had, I think Mark McGee says. So I don't expect to see him. Stevie Hamill, as you say, has really been a bit inconsistent since he got injured a couple of seasons ago, where he missed nearly the full season. Appearance-wise there, his form's another matter, but I don't know if we'll see him then. But as you says, it's other than the left back position, guys like Ross McLean, pushing for that first team. So hopefully you'll see maybe guys like him get a chance if he's performing well enough in training and things like that. So it goes from being forced to maybe only have one option available for left back to maybe a couple of options in the midfield or on the wings here. So it'll be interesting to see how we set up and whether or not we stick with the sort of youthful approach.
Joe, you would have to hope that given these boys got their chance at Celtic Park, performed well, that Mark McGee is going to persist with this and perhaps not throw them in too often at the deep end, but at least kind of continue to develop them and give them more chances at first team level?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I don't know if the two boys that started are going to start again on Wednesday, then again on Saturday. That might be a bit too much. I think there's probably an element of horses for courses. If you think when they play Bowman as well as Moulton McDonald in a couple of home games, although that kind of, other than that, his game's not kind of proved to be as successful just yet. But yeah, certainly I think they definitely should be allowed more game time just now, allow them to develop. I mean, we've seen a lot of young players come in and they maybe make two or three sub appearances, they stagnate and then just slowly slip out. But if these boys are doing well, then we certainly need to keep giving them a chance.
Buster, we'll finish up by just another quick thank you to everyone that supported the podcast book, which again, we had a great turnout at Fir Park on Monday night, a really good night where a lot of the guys got along and signed the copies of the book. We've still got some on sale, which will help us reach around about £1,500, which is well beyond what we hoped for, and we can only thank again all the people that have contributed, including Stephen Grieve at SCG Supplies, who sponsored the whole publication as well. The guys that pre-ordered, without them, we wouldn't have been able to get the idea off the ground. So it's been a really good success, and it was a good night getting to catch up with the likes of Kevin Twaddle and Louis Moult, who have been on the podcast before, and again were great value.
As you say, you know, also a big thanks goes to the guys, you know, the guys at the Cup of the Noon, the guys who have been at the Cup and girls in the past. You know, these guys gave up their time to first of all speak to a few of yous, you know, so we could put it down on paper, and then obviously to come along on a Monday night. So big thanks to them. It was good to catch up with Big Twads again. I've not seen them in a while. But as you say, to be honest with you, when you know you were telling me, and again, I want to stress this again. It was on your end, back, Sparrow. You might have got people to, you know, help you with interviews, and you know, Joe wrote a piece, I wrote a wee tiny bit, Jay wrote a bit, you know, Andy P wrote a bit. But you know, this was your idea. You were the one that put this forward to help Reimagine. So it's you that deserves the praise here. So big well done to yourself, mate. Congratulations, obviously, on smashing your target there. And it's I'm sure Joe will agree. It's fantastic to be associated in any way with it, but it was all off your own back, mate. So well done.
Absolutely, it was a great to see how it eventually turned out from the idea. I mean, it was a great idea, great cause, and I mean the standard of it was fantastic. I mean, the work you must have put in to get the several players, past and present, to kind of do interviews for it, and carrying out those interviews themselves certainly must have been taxing, and must have been a big effort for you to see how well it's turned out and how much money has been raised. Yeah, certainly a brilliant thing to look at.
Not even that, as you say, the presentation is fantastic. You know, I know what a book looks like, obviously, but I wasn't sure what we were going to get there. But see, when you came to my door and showed me it, I was blown away. I was delighted by how it looked. That was smashing me.
Well, I'm just actually looking at some of the signed copies. Louis Moult signed the front cover of quite a few for me during the week. And unfortunately, because they've all been sitting on top of each other, the back covers are covered in ink. So if you want a bargain, just give us a shout and we'll sort that out. Well, apart from that, it's been great. We can't thank everyone involved enough. Guys, we'll call it a day there, because we've got a midweek podcast to do as well, and we can all get on with our Sundays. Thank you very much.
No bother,
much.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following them for next game on Wednesday. Until then, thank you, goodbye.